We're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The hockey world, all eyes on the Maple Leafs and the Dallas Stars tonight at 8:30 p.m. The battle of the two hot streaks go head-to-head for Mitch Marner to get one or 2 points plus money. 2 points.
Oh, I thought you were going to say one. I was like,
Jason
okay,
Robertson,
show me where I'm betting
Jason
that right now.
Jason Robertson, 2 points plus money. Parlay those together, maybe in the wake and rake.
Opposite way?
You could be fading these two. You could be going with your heart. You could be putting goal scoring in there. You have that opportunity with the wake and rake at 590. Maybe we'll do a Leaf Stars parlay. We got a chance to talk to Marty Turco yesterday, former NHL goaltender and the president of the Dallas Stars Foundation. We started out by asking about those incredible reverse retro jerseys.
Well, I, you know, can't take all the credit, but those reverse retro jerseys are, I mean, they're hot, they're fire. I just think they look so good, and not even because that's the logo I played for either. They're just really, you know, really well done with the kind of the new green. But I'm not a fan of black jerseys for the most part, but these ones just really, they just look good, and, you know, guy's been scoring goals wearing them.
Yeah, they definitely pop on someone like Jason Robertson, who just can't be stopped. And, you know, tonight we're going to see the matchup of Marner versus Robertson, two hot streaks. But just the lowdown on a guy that's just been absolutely dynamite to start the season. He's coming out and really making a name for himself this season, especially. What's impressed you the most about what he's been able to do, especially on this hot streak that he's on?
The hot streak aside, I would say the kid's a gamer, and you know, before this year, even last year, and when I first saw him in our lineup, I was like, "Who's this guy?" And yeah, he's not just fastest and the biggest and the silkiest looking hockey player, but he's pretty darn good. I'll tell you, all the things added up. Best way I describe him, like if you're gonna have a pond hockey game tomorrow, he's first overall. Like the guy just. He does it all. He plays to win. He does those little things that you just, if you watch him, just put a camera on him or put your eyes on him night in, night out. He just does little things to get an advantage every little which way. But he's on you. And he's like glue playing defense. He wants the puck back and he wants to go down and score goals. And sometimes he doesn't even look satisfied after he scored a wicked goal. But the streak is... It's just his tenacity. Clearly, he's playing with good players, but he makes people around him better. And I really think it's his play without the puck that makes all the difference in the world, because we all see the highlights. We know what he can do with the puck, but without the puck is really what separates him.
So that's interesting. You say he's first draft in a pond hockey game, but like he doesn't have, you know, the obvious skill set of McDavid or the shot. Necessarily, he might have the shot, but. He didn't score 60 goals like Austin Matthews, where you score in any which way. It's, it just seems like he finds a way to be dominant through other means. So what are those means? Like, why is he first overall in the pond hockey draft?
Well, because there's no referees in pond hockey, and this guy plays to win. You know, he's tall, he's solid, he's even going to get stronger over the years. But, you know, the little things are just his hand positioning. And then his desire too. He doesn't say, "Hey, wait till the puck's coming my way, and I'm going to turn it on." He's in the right position. He works hard to get there. He put his hand positioning, his body positioning, just trying to get an advantage. And you know, you could talk to athletes, you know, young girls and boys, and just say, "Hey, you never know what's going to come to you, the puck, or you never know what the next play is going to happen. You can't control everything, but you better be darn ready." And he takes that to the nth degree, and he is always ready, and even so much so that, you know, when there's a turnover or the other team has a puck, he just wants it back, and he doesn't push the issue. He doesn't get out of position trying to force it by any means, but whatever he can do within his means in order to gain an advantage with just the way he positions himself, where he goes on the ice, and what he does to just knock other people off balance. And then just pounding the puck like crazy when he doesn't have it. Those are the things. And so when there's no referee there, and I say pond hockey, he's just looking for all his advantages. He does it legally, It's just, you know, just keep an eye on the guy, you know, young boys and girls who want to learn how to play the game of hockey away from the park. Jason Robertson's the guy.
It can't hurt that he's playing with Joe Pavelski and Roope Hintz, forming the most prolific line in hockey, at least from an offensive perspective right now. Why have those three been such a great fit?
Well, it's still a great question. Obviously, the answer is it just works, and that's it. You know, let's fast or rewind 16, 18 months ago, planning for the season a couple of years ago, and you're like, you could have put together 19 different line combinations, and that would have been the 20th, because it just doesn't make sense individually. But the sum of the parts is one of the greatest things that we've seen, when it just doesn't seem to make sense. You know, you got, you know, Marner and Austin Matthews and, you know, somebody else. You're like, oh, yeah, that works. You know, it makes sense. But, you know, these guys, Joe's, you know, great hands, great guy, veteran, not that fast, but super smart. And Robertson's just a tools guy. And then you have Roope's big centerman and can fly out there and shoot. But this just works collectively. And I just think their hockey IQ is off the charts. And they all just, they want to get the puck back and go. Kind of way describing Robertson. They're all a little bit like that. And Roope gets a lot of credit for being a two-way centerman. So, you know, at the end of the day, if you have the puck, you have a better chance of scoring and less chance of them scoring. And yeah, it's a simple way they play the game, but they do with high efficiency. And just it's been a treat and very fortunate for the Stars and our organization and fan base to have those three clicking like they are.
So Hintz nails down the 8-year deal, maximum term. Jason Robertson might have the best contract in hockey if you look for value. Is there any awkwardness there? Is that all good? Like, there's no problem that Jason Robertson might be a little bit underpaid already, and he's, what, 25 games into this contract?
Well, I think, as the saying goes, it's too soon to talk about that. I don't even think he's put enough money in the bank to be have any conversations like this. Roope doesn't kick in until next year, and you know, this conversation is probably for a couple of years from now. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it'll be a problem. The guys are really well played and well paid and well played, so I think they're doing just fine. And I never heard anything of that, and this is the first time it's really been brought up, but I think this is more conversation for a couple of years down the road. And it's fortunate for us. If he keeps his pace, too. Like, that's the pace he's on is sublime. So if he keeps this up, then the conversation will have some validity.
So Justin mentioned Nick Robertson, who's obviously on the other side here with us in Toronto. He obviously hasn't really had the most prolific start, especially when you cross compare him to his brother. Do you ever feel like, or would you think that maybe there's some extra pressure on a guy like him here in this market when, you know, just down the south of the border, someone is making headlines every single night?
Well, Jason's making the headlines because of his play. There's enough pressure playing in the NHL. There's enough pressure playing for the Leafs, having a brothers, having a Hart Trophy season. Mm-hmm. Different. But, you know, I could flip the script and say, hey, they're only head-to-head matchup this year in Toronto. You know, look who's got mm-hmm. the best of them. Mm-hmm. Who scored the goal? So I know it'll be on Jason's mind tomorrow come game time. He knows I'm going to be shown up by his bro again. But I honestly can't speak. I don't have a brother. I have two awesome sisters. Everything they do, I'm just super proud of them. So I would imagine as brothers that he's just actually really proud of his brother and might be asking if he can upgrade his car a little bit over the summer next year, if he needs a few features, some new rims or something. But other than that, I just think it's family pride and nothing else. They get to work together this summer. I imagine that would be amazing. So they're not even the same conference in the same league. I mean, maybe there's a 5-10% chance that there's you know, you get that extra push, but I think the both of them, I think it's already built in internally. You know, for both of them to play in the NHL is pretty darn impressive, never mind what they're doing. So I think Nick will be fine in the TO, and maybe this will be a good game for him to get the juices flowing and get back on track the way the Leafs and he wants to do it.
Well, it's an interesting comparison between the two, because it seems like Nick Robertson's play off the puck is kind of what's holding him back. While you mentioned that that's the strength of Jason Robertson's game, is there anything that Jason had to sort of overcome early on to get him to the point where he fit in and blossomed into this NHL superstar? Was there anything that any early, not early adversity, but things he had to learn and get under his belt before he could really shine?
Yeah, from my perspective, the answer is no. And I certainly don't. I'm not around locker room every day or anything like that, but I literally meant it. The first time he played for us, and in the first period, I was like, who's this guy again? And it was because of just the little, you know, touches of the puck and body movement and placement and, you know, just how he would, you know, hound it. And so I think because he – I just think that's the way he plays. I don't think he could turn it off. I watch practice. He's like that every second of the day. And so to make it to this level, to you never be, you know, talked about as best players in the league or super, super high draft picks and the most amazing prospects and just knowing he had to earn everything that he got, I think that makes the player that you are. And so, you know, when you don't, you know, not heralded like that, it just you just work a little bit harder for it if that's something that you want. So, you know, we play a pretty wide open game relative to, you know, Toronto, and so our, you know, our defensive side is not as talked about as much. We can certainly, you know, clean things up. Our, you know, our goals against is a little higher than you guys, and I think you'll get it. And you know, everybody's different, even though they're brothers too, right? They're just you know, they're not twins by any means. So we're happy with our guy. That's all I know.
We're speaking with Marty Turco, former NHL goaltender and president of the Dallas Stars Foundation. So, Marty, a couple other names here that have been maybe less of headliners just because of what's happening with Robertson, but Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin are having some promising turnaround seasons here. Do you think that they hold that extra key, the veteran leadership that might make this team a championship team?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, our captain starts with him, right? Jamie Benn, amazing person, great captain, great leader. I mean, he's relatively quiet, I guess, compared to some, but he's more of a, you know, Bergeron type guy when you think of somebody on the East Coast. But you know, he's a gold medal winner. You know, won the Art Ross, and those things, they matter to him, but they don't. And he just wants to win a Stanley Cup. He wants to do it with this. Here in this town, and he's just, you know, we go as he goes, and to see him resurge a little bit this year, kind of found a fountain of youth, not by him by any means. It's because he's playing with a couple of young, awesome players that just really seems to work. And Tyler had a great start to the year too. A couple of young guys helping pick it up, and so I mean, we got some. I mean, we do have really young guys on our team, and they look up to those two. You know, they get paid a lot. They've been in the league, done some wonderful things in the NHL, and they are veterans. And so we need those two guys to be, you know, models of professional hockey players. Joe Pavelski's in there as well. I mean, Suter's played, you know, so I think 1,300 games in the NHL. So we definitely have that veteran experience, and the guys that have been around here the longest, especially our longest running captain in Stars franchise history. We'll be 30 years old next year. So that just says something. So we do. We have a good team, good mix of youth and some older guys, and those two were the faces of the franchise for the last 6-7 years. And we're going to probably need them when it's all said and done if we're going to go deep in the playoffs.
Pete DeBoer continues to make a habit of having early 10-year success with a franchise. Tremendous start, obviously, led by him being the first-year guy with the Dallas Stars. What's made him the right guy for the job right now?
Well, you know, you could just generalize some of it, right? New voice, new system, really calming influence. I'm watching. I'm just a, you know, I'm at games. I'm watching the players and the benches and just the overall feel of the game and try to predict it like Tony Romo does here. just half kidding. But Pete's been, he's just not a yeller, right? And you know, his interviews are just all about confidence and, you know, the play and getting better and moving on. And I just think that's probably breath of fresh air for the guys. And you know, we haven't really had – you've had some interesting games, comebacks, and some some tough losses. But for the most part, it has been a great year, and he's I could see why people do like him. I've enjoyed being around him, and certainly want to see multiple years success. Kind of continue this thing, but we just got to do it for this year. We got a long ways to go. We got a good young goalie, backup solid, but Pete's just been and his staff for that. Just the way we play too, I think it just, guys love it. It's just a lot of pressure, a lot of goal, a lot of speed. Practices are crisp when I watch them, and I think it's just the guys really enjoy it. So again, it remains to be seen what it's going to look like, a few months from now, especially next year. But there's just so much hockey for us. We're at home all week, and clearly the Leafs are here in town tonight, so that's always a ton of fun. So really, really looking forward to it. Two good teams, top of the standings in their conferences. So it'd be a good battle, but Pete's been wonderful for us so far.
Definitely have to ask you about goaltending, and you mentioned you got some youngins. Well, Jake Ottinger is having, I'd say he's in the top 3 to 5 conversation for Vezina all season long. What's working for him this year?
Well, this is first crack, right? Being a starter at this level, and signed a deal in the summer after quite exquisite. I don't think I've ever used that word for a hockey player, but an exquisite, unbelievable performance in the playoffs last year, losing in 7. And so Jake is a big guy. He's young and talented. And I think he's just getting the opportunity to run with it. And had an injury early on, missed a little bit of time, came back, and it took a little time to settle in. But, when he's on and he's calm, and he's just one of those goalies that just oozes confidence, and not a cocky guy by any means. He just goes about his business and has a smile on his face, works hard. And you just tell that it just moves over to the bench and moves the puck pretty cleanly. And he's just a great presence in there. I mean, I know, and I see him in warm-ups beginning of the game, and just tracking the puck and making things look easy. Gives me confidence. I'm just sitting up there biting my nails, that's what you look for in a goalie. We think we got one that could be just one of those guys you can have for 10 years and have a good run with the small ups and downs here and there. But he's good. He's quick, and when he's calm, he's even better. And so we feel very fortunate that we possibly found our guy for the next generation.
A success story for sure from the first round, and maybe a reminder to other teams that are a little reluctant to pick a goaltender in the first round that it can be very, very profitable, as it's been so far with Jake Ottinger. But the Leafs have gone a different route. They had two major gambles in the offseason with Ilya Samsonov and Matt Murray. I wonder if you have much of a Matt Murray opinion on his game. Of course, he's won back-to-back Stanley Cups, has bounced around a little bit, and now he's got this fresh start with the Maple Leafs and looked really, really good to start. Do you have any hard opinions on Matt Murray and his development, where he is in his career, and what he might mean for the Maple Leafs in the end?
I do. I got a really fascinating opinion of Matt. I got to know him and sippy side him when he was 17 years old playing for the Greyhounds. That was my last year trying to play professional hockey, finished my career later that year with the Bruins, and just getting to be around him almost on a daily basis. He'd come from high school, I'd come from home shoveling my snow and doing chores at home, and so I've always liked the kid. His story is outstanding. He's just a very diligent, thoughtful, kid to me. And watching him, go win Stanley Cups, being that calming presence in the net, making the saves that you have to. And at the end of the day, that's all it is. It's just making the saves you have to. Some guys have to make a few more on teams that are wide open or just poor defensively. But I think the way the Leafs are built and the talent that they have and the camaraderie too, that, a lot of that core has been together, that, they're looking for one of these guys or both of them, which they have been, just to be solid and make those saves when it counts. And, that's what Matt's career has been about. And, no one's going to say, hey, maybe he is you know, one of the best in Canada. I think he is if you want to win hockey games. But when he's healthy, when he's moving good, Matt's, you know, solid as anyone. And if somebody described me as solid during most of my career, I would have taken that opinion and ran with it. And more importantly, he's a good dude that you can count on. And I wish them all the best, even tomorrow night. I don't say it very often. I'm always looking for one bad game from guys I like, but for Matt Murray, he's going to tonight. I'll be cheering for him no matter what.
All right, speaking of tonight, both Marner and Nick Robertson, or Jason Robertson, man, they get those two really tongue-tied here.
We got Nick on the brain. We apologize.
Both Marner and not Nick coming in with hot streaks. Marner with 19, Jason with 18. Do you think both streaks survive tonight's matchup?
Both, huh? Man, odds are no, but I'm going to go with yeah. I'm going with my gut. You know, we played the Wild the other night. There's a couple other streaks on the line. Boom, first period. Mm-hmm. I think they went down or not that far into the game. And so I'm just going to... I think Texas is hot right now. Maybe not our weather's hot, although it's we're having a nice week of temperatures, 70s yesterday. Today's another nice day. I think the temperatures stay hot here in Texas. Everything down here is just going that way. So I'm thinking the streak for both of them continue. And if you want to keep throwing Nick in there, maybe he starts one tonight.
Maybe Nick starts. Yeah, one game streak.
First of 18.
Marty, appreciate you joining us. Have fun watching tonight, and hopefully both streaks continue for content for us tomorrow morning.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to having the Leafs here. It's always a treat, and it's also a treat talking to you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much. All right, big night tonight. Leafs and Stars. Do you think both streaks continue?
I kind of do, yeah.
Wow.
I feel like it's going to be a low-scoring game, though.
It will be 2-1.
But, like, it's coming from Marner for the Leafs, and it's coming from Robertson from the Dallas Stars.
Like, goals or just points? I mean, Robertson has been scoring at an incredible pace. Marner's more of the assist guy.
Yeah. Robertson's streak's been way more prolific, by the way. Like, he's putting up numbers on this streak. I feel like, you know, that's where as I said, that's where the offense is coming from, Dallas. And if they're going to get, he didn't have that great of a performance last time versus Brother Nick. So we'll see.
Yeah, he was scared of the moment.
It just feels like from the Leafs, it has to come from Marner right now. So saying that, I think it will.
All right. You can parlay a Jason Robertson goal and a Mitch Marner assist.
That's not bad.
If that's the thoughts you want, plus 240.
It's not bad.
All right, it's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
The awards keep rolling in for Alec Manoa. His trophy cabinet continues to grow. Yesterday, he's named one of five starting pitchers to the All-MLB first team selection. This season, along with, you know, some of the best of the best, Sandy Alcantara, Alec Manoa, Shohei Ohtani, Framber Valdez, and Justin Verlander. Ever heard of them? Pretty good competition to be in. Pretty good group of guys that you are put in the conversation with. In 2022, Alec Manoa is now an All-MLB first team pitcher, a finalist for the Cy Young, a finalist for outstanding pitcher, an all-star, team history fastest to 300 Ks, and team history lowest ERA in a month, and he's 24 years old.
He's a stud. He's our guy. He jumps Dylan Cease, too, in the voting, because I think he finished, Cease finished second in the Cy Young, and Alec Manoa jumped him because he was named to one of these as the first team, and Cease wasn't. Shohei also got in, so it was a little bit different, but it's good to see Manoa get his accolades. Recognition can be a powerful thing. I think Manoa is no different.
Well, we'll see who the Blue Jays add, maybe to their starting rotation to join Alec Manoa, hopefully to their starting rotation, bullpen, outfield, all these things. Winter meetings kicking off yesterday out west. We'll have more of that, I'm sure. JP Morosi will keep us full of content, but we're going to take a break. We're going to talk to CJ Miles, former NBA guard, see if he agrees with Justin's comment that this season is now a disappointment. The Toronto Raptors.
Put that on me, eh?
Well, you said it. It's next, Justin and Ailish on the Fan Morning Show.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forfar. Reminder, get those Wake and Rake submissions in. Didn't hit it yesterday. We're sniffing around, though.
We were surprised that game didn't go to an over.
Brazil set the table.
Yeah, you must have felt extremely confident after that one.
I can only run on... What is yesterday's starting pitcher type of thing? What's that line? Momentum is only as strong as your next day's starting pitcher. Oh. Momentum only as strong as your next World Cup pick. So get your Wake and Rake submissions in. And we'll do that, of course, in the 8:30 block. But for now, we got CJ Miles, former NBA guard and co-host of Strictly Hoops on Yahoo Sports Canada with my guy, Amit Mann. Pretty exciting. CJ, what's going on?
What's up, man? Not much, man. You know, just making breakfast for the kids before they go to school.
What's for breakfast?
I was demanded by my 5-year-old for a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich. So ooh, that's what I'm making.
That's pretty
good.
Do
you deliver Uber Eats over to Young and Bloor area?
5 years.
If she was over there, she'd make me.
before we get to the Raptors, entering the podcast space, tell us a bit about that, why you wanted to get into it, and how much fun you're having doing it.
So to answer the last part first, I'm having a great time. But the biggest thing was I didn't know how much fun it was going to be. I knew we were going to talk basketball. You know, I knew it wasn't going to be any pressure with it. But, like, after we filmed the first episode, I remember coming out of it, like, just refreshed and, like, you know, it was just a good time. But the biggest thing was just being able to be able to talk about basketball in a way that, what's the best way? Like, you know how you look at social media now, you see the way people talk to players and about players sometimes. And, like, we were just talking about right before that how there's a lot of negative space on the media side that's kind of creeping up and taking a lot of the good space. So we were just happy to be able to be on the other side.
Okay, so how do you balance that, though? Because, like, if things are going poorly, I mean, it can't all be about vibes. It can't all be good times. And today we're kind of dealing with that as well. Like, at least I've gotten to the point where I'm a little bit disappointed with this Raptors season through 24 games being 12-12, maybe not necessarily showing some of the progress that we expected. So where do you stand on this Raptors season? Is it a mild disappointment? Is it a disappointment, or is it too soon for you to categorize it that way?
So I poorly put those words together. What I mean by the negative space is attacking players, not so much attacking the game and the game the way it's being played. If somebody's playing bad at a professional athlete, the door is open for you to be talked about your playing, not to be attacked as a person and as, like, overboard. As far as we can talk about the game and talk about how bad it's playing or anybody's plan, but also let's try to talk about solutions. Let's try to talk about things that could be done better and could be done in a way to help this place. As far as the Raptors team, I think it's early to call it a disappointment. There are things that we want to see that I would like to see, especially with having personal relationships with some of those guys, and I know those guys and know that they want it. But I think there's just things they're figuring out. They're still figuring out that second unit. They're still figuring out who's in the first or second unit. There's a lot of things going on.
So what aren't you seeing, CJ, that you'd like to see from this team right now?
I guess the consistency that I feel like they can have, but there's been a lot of ups and downs with injuries, obviously, and then that's been leading to Nick playing with the lineups, trying to figure things out. But I think the biggest thing is they have a good enough roster and a talented enough roster where they could be there could be less ups and downs. There's going to be ups and downs in the season, but I think there's a chance with them fully healthy and figuring out the roster spot or the roster changes, lineup changes, that they can be on the up and trend up and have a really big run.
How tough is it to have a starting lineup that shifts so frequently? I think it's 11 straight games that Nick Nurse has kind of put the lines in a blender here. Is it tough to create that chemistry? Are you practicing enough with these guys that you're able to kind of seamlessly go in and out of that lineup?
I think it can be done. I think with this group, those guys are still learning each other, and there's a lot of guys that are still figuring out their roles in general in the NBA. So I think it's hard for them. But with veteran teams, they've shown that they can do it. But I think right now it's hard for them just because those guys are trying to figure out their roles still. The biggest thing is that they just got to figure out how to trust the system. They can trust the system and trust in they're going to get their shots no matter if they're coming off the bench or starting, and the main thing is winning, it can be done.
We're chatting with CJ Miles, former NBA guard, and now the co-host of Strictly Hoops on Yahoo Sports Canada. And why, you know, that show can be so successful is that you have insight that few have, and that specific insight into the Toronto Raptors. And on Friday night, apparently they had a players-only meeting after a rough loss in Brooklyn where they were basically out of it before they were ever in it. And one of the comments to come out of that was that leadership is sometimes unspoken with the Toronto Raptors. What do you think that means, leadership being unspoken, the Raptors culture, and the fact that things had to be said Friday night when maybe it generally doesn't function that way?
The one thing that I know from my time there is that, especially with Fred and Pascal, those guys are workers. Those guys are leaders by example, and they try to get it done. And I think that people saying you see two all-stars just getting it done the same way Kyle and DeMar were when they were there, getting it done, being there early, getting your work done, doing the work to take the right steps to win games. Like, a lot of guys kind of follow suit just by kind of seeing that. But I think, you know, sometimes you get to these spots and these lows where you need to have those conversations as a group without the coaching staff. So some guys are going to be a little bit more honest without everybody in the room and with each other. And then you can kind of figure it out from there about whatever's going on or why we can't put everything together. So I think sometimes the leading by action is going to have to take the back seat. But at the same time, you don't want to just be throwing words around all the time. You don't want to just be saying stuff. You want to get it done because those speak louder.
Obviously, one of the main leaders of the Toronto Raptors is Fred VanVleet, and I think it's easily stated that he hasn't been playing up to, I think, his caliber over the last little while, and he's coming back from an illness, which is certainly a factor. He's a leader by example and a leader vocally, but what needs to change in terms of Fred's play to kind of get back on track to be that dominant shooter and that dominant player that we see and expect from him?
It's pretty much what you said, like what we talked about a few minutes ago, being consistent, being able to be on the floor, it's unfortunate that the injuries and the sickness have happened. Those are things that kind of go out of your hands. But when he is healthy and he's playing consistently, he's consistent when he's able to be healthy. And for him to be able to do that and be the leader he is, the shooting opens up the floor so much more, the plays that he's able to make terribly with the ball at the point guard position, and just he has a knack for making big plays. He's another guy that can help you finish games and stop teams from making runs if they're trying to close the gap or put a team out of their misery, whatever it may be. He has those capabilities, from whether it be shooting or passing or just making a defensive play with his hands and steals. So I think to get him back to lead that ship is big.
Precious Achiuwa was in the crosshairs, and most recently Gary Trent Jr. in the crosshairs of Nick Nurse, who has shown no reluctance to call his own players out in the media. I wonder, as a guy who's been under Nick Nurse before, what you think? Do you smile when those comments come out? And what do you think of his overall approach? Like, if that's the Nick Nurse way, do you think it's a effective way?
So I know. So for me, knowing Nick and other coaches I've had, what I know is that he's not saying anything that he has not said to them personally. You know what I mean? So it's not, I know it wasn't that way for me or when I saw it. And I don't think it's a shock to them. I know sometimes we see it in the paper or on the internet or hear a clip and we're like, man, he really went at him. And there's so many other voices from the outside that sometimes can make it rocky. But the way I always saw it as a player is that my coach thinks I have more in me and he wants it. It's a compliment. Like, he thinks I can give my team more. He thinks I can help us win more. He thinks I can do more things. And which, if I do them, leads to more opportunities, which every player wants, which is to play more and more opportunities. So that's the way I see that. I think it should be taken as, you know, just a little tap on the tail and just get after it. Like, it's a wish for so many guys on the end of benches to have their coaches say that. when instead of nothing or to not get in the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. One player who's certainly absorbed Nick Nurse's message over the years, OG Anunoby, who you were teammates with back in 2018-19. What sort of change have you seen in this guy? What sort of potential did you see back then? What do you make of his development, into a player that we're talking about among the greats defensively around the league?
Usually it's mental is the biggest change for guys. Like OG had all the tools, like athletically, strength, big, strong, showed capability to be able to shoot the ball at some point in the early, it was corner threes and catch and shoot, things like that. Now you see him moving with the ball, handling it more, he's posting, he's taking advantage of all the things that he has. But mentally, he has just grasped the fact that I can do this. I belong at the top of this list of steals and blocks and shutting guys down, and not so much worried about if it's got to be, if my role's got to be scoring. The scoring's going to come from the opportunities of me being on the floor. I think we get caught up in that a lot of times when you want to grow offensively and he has the capability to focus on the main things and then let the extra minutes that I get help me turn those minutes into making more baskets and more opportunities. And I spoke to him when guys got hurt and there were a lot of guys out, and I said, this is the opportunity you were waiting on. This is what you were asking for, so now you just make sure you take advantage of this time on every aspect. Don't let the defensive side slip because you're getting more shots, and don't go in just taking any type of shot. And he's mentally grasped the game, the time and score. And he's still, turnovers are going to go up, but that's expected with young players when they get the ball more. There's some three-point percentages that's dropped a little bit, but there's more shots. So this just, you know, just taking the time and in the extra shots in the gym and realizing the type of shots you're getting now and just repetition.
So I know on your podcast you spoke about how you were Chris Boucher's vet, and he's also somebody that's looking to make the most of the opportunities he does get. What makes his role on the Raptors so special?
I mean, Chris Boucher, I've loved Chris Boucher since the day I met him. He has an ultimate confidence in himself, and he should, because of the route he's had to take to get to where he's at and the work he's done to be the person he is. But my favorite thing about Chris Boucher's role on the Raptors, and I said this on the podcast, is he gets to be Chris Boucher. He gets to come in, be energy, wreak havoc in any and every way that he can. He does not have to shy away from any part of his game, and that kind of open offense that they run, that up-tempo has allowed him to even add more things. But he's shooting the ball well. He blocks shots. He changes shots to the rim. He can guard multiple positions. He's moving well and cutting better without the ball, and that's coming from just being on the floor more and realizing there's more things he could do offensively. But I think the energy he brings and the toughness he brings off that bench is unmatched.
We know what it means to fans, but when you are a Toronto Raptor, what does the Celtics rivalry mean?
And the crazy thing is, I know we try to like to say, we say the Celtics, I think it's a good team rivalry. Like any of the teams that are like the top teams and you want to be the top team, like that there's a chip that's on your shoulder when those guys, when we stand in front of each other. But the biggest thing with them, they've been a great team in the East for a few years now. They got two guys over there with Tatum and Brown who are as good as anybody as a duo and at the wing position. They're solid defensively. They pass the ball well. They move well without the ball. Guys play their roles. It's kind of like what you're striving to be in Toronto right now, figuring out how your main guys can help everybody else get better and guys can follow those roles and be efficient at them. And I think it's really just a mirror. Like, you're looking at it like, all right, this is a good gauge of what we're trying to do. And we need to give them the biggest swing we can give them to make sure we can really test that. And I think it's going to be fun.
There are differences, though, between Toronto and Boston. Like, obviously, Boston's further along in the process, title contender, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But they're also, like, conventional. And I feel like the Raptors pride themselves on being unconventional. And this is one thing we've been talking about a little bit lately, is the limitations on being unconventional. When you have to adapt every game plan differently, when you have to put the pieces in different places on the chessboard every night, I feel like if it's not perfect, then it can kind of blow up in your face when you play like that. And this is, I guess, a comment on how the Raptors are structured. But doesn't it feel like a Boston team that, you know, kind of knows what they're doing every night with their role players being pretty fixed in their positions is just more reliable and overall, over a long period of time, probably more effective? Like, can unconventional backfire is, I guess, what I'm asking.
Excuse me. Yes and no. At least from what I believe. Yes, what you're saying about them being conventional and having guys kind of set
in their roles and things like that. But it's also this can be done on the Toronto side just with players, what as Masai calls the 6'9 project, just with 6'9s that are guys that are 6'9. Mm-hmm. I think they're just figuring that out. There's more guys that are pretty much been pillars in that Boston Celtics situation that have been there for a longer time. There hasn't been much changeover in the big name guys as there has in Toronto. And then there's guys that are, they're really young, you know, like the guys off the bench are trying to figure it out, and they can figure out, like Gary Trent coming off the bench in New Orleans and scoring 35 is a big sign. We don't win the game, but that's a big sign because now you have a guy like that that you can move around into that unit to help that first unit. Now we can start placing guys to be in that consistently that can just be with OG and Fred and Pascal, and we can balance it all the way through. I think it's been a little top-heavy, which is why Nick is doing what he's doing. Boston doesn't have that problem. They figure out how to get Brown and Tatum off the floor with each other early, so one's without the other in the second unit, and the other guys have figured out how to play with either of those guys. I think we're still figuring that out here in Toronto. But I do agree with you, but that they have a consistent system set role players, that guys that have been able to do that, which is why their success has been consistent every year. It's like when you look at Milwaukee, there's some changeover, but they're consistently with a pillar of guys that do the same kind of things and play the same type of role. Toronto's building that with Fred, Pascal, and OG, and now just building around them and finding guys that can play those roles for years to come.
And somebody that, you know, hopefully fits into that puzzle piece for a long time to come would be Scotty Barnes, who's coming off that rookie of the year season. And I think it's fair to say that we might have had pretty lofty expectations for him. And he hasn't been at that level that he was at last year so far throughout the season. How difficult do you think following up that performance for a young guy is to do a back-to-back, you know, record-breaking type of performance for the Raptors? And if it's just a little bit of getting comfortable with his role now in year two?
I think it's even harder when you're not the guy. Like, if this was a young team that they were building and everything was for him, it would be easier because you can deal with the ups and downs more because you wouldn't have anywhere else to lean. He's not the guy. So coming in and trying to figure out his role with Pascal and those guys, as he's trying to grow also, not that he hasn't figured his role out, but he's trying to grow within that role, it's hard. Now you come in also this year, everybody's ready for you. You're on everybody's scout report. We know the things you like to do, the things you've done last year that made you successful. We're going to try to take those away. We're going to test that work you did in the summer. We're going to test your growth. We're going to test you mentally. And that's the biggest part for the second year because, you know, you're a young kid, young guy. You just came off rookie of the year, had a great season. Like, mentally, you're up. You're charged up the whole summer. And you wanted to go exactly how you've seen it in your head through all your workouts. And that's usually not how it goes, at least not at first. The dip in it is part of the process. There's going to be drops in percentages when new shots are coming. There's going to be drops in or raising turnovers when you're playing point guard. Or now you're guarding different positions. I've been at games, like, he's guarded a point guard full court. That's a change in conditioning. That's going to change the way you shoot the ball and play offensively, too. There's a lot of things that go into this. But the biggest thing is just staying the course. He's too talented, too good, works too hard, too many good people around him as far as coaching staff and other players where he can't come out of this even better than he was last year. And it's not even as bad as we think. It's just not the huge jump you expect to happen right away or we thought would happen right away.
Beyond Scotty, is there anyone that you've seen, new guys with the Raptors, someone where you've just picked up on, like, the Raptors way? Like, you see someone who comes in and immediately does something, and you're like, oh, Nick Nurse is, you know, he's had his fingerprints on that type of player. Like, your experience with these guys, yeah, you played with Fred, you played with Pascal and OG and Chris. But do you see the Raptors way sort of being drilled into other players that have since joined the team?
I see it with Thad and Juancho, right, being put in the starting lineup. You see them being those guys we're talking about that can play with your main guys and but hold all the Raptor system attributes. Moving quick decisions, catch and shoot, catch and pass, screen, cut, play hard defensively in the roles you're in as far as the team defense. I think Delano has a real good chance that also the same type of attributes. He reminds me kind of like a DeLon Wright 2.0, long athletic lead guard, fast to the ball, defends well, a lot of pace. There's I think there's those three guys right now can really change a lot of things as they continue to grow in the lineup, changing and things like that. I think Gary Trent is being forced on him. Like he has no choice. But which is a good thing. Like that lets you know that winning is his main goal because he's taking the challenge. But those guys, especially, it eventually gets to everybody, but those guys, especially right now, can make the biggest shift for this team.
And that's saying something because Thad and Wancho kind of helped carry them through that stretch where they were without Pascal Siakam. Last one for you, CJ. You know, it's kind of understood that this team is a piece away probably from really, really, really being competitive. In your mind, in saying that, what do you think the Raptors are missing in terms of personnel? Like, what type of player could come in here, whether it's via trade, to really upgrade them from, you know, what could be a gatekeeper to what could be, you know, a legitimate top 2, 3, 4 team in the Eastern Conference this year?
So I always look at that, like, the need of a guy. I never know if that's the case with them because of the way they play. I think there's a guy on that team they need to do some certain things that, and is capable of. But if I had to, like, pick, I would say if I could have another guy in the realm of, like, a Gary Trent, where I could have two guys like that can really score the ball but can play catch-and-shoot roles, where I have one off and in the starting lineup and off the bench, or a guy maybe not as skilled as Gary Trent but that we can run around and shoot it on the wing too, where Fred doesn't have to be the one that always does it, I think it changes a lot. I think you add another threat, another spacer, a guy that can play both sides of the ball a little bit, that's still long, but can really score that ball without always having a habit. I think that's a big, big thing that could help change on that wing side.
You can listen to CJ Miles break down the Raptors and the NBA on Strictly Hoops on Yahoo Sports Canada with Amit Mann. Definitely worth checking out. CJ, we appreciate the time, and we look forward to continuing to hear your breakdowns on the Raptors and beyond.
Man, thank you guys for having me. Thank you so much.
Man, I want one of those bacon, egg, and cheeses.
I know. Got Uber Eats pulled up here. Send it over.
Yeah, they definitely... CJ Miles Kitchen.
How hungry are you?
Was he ever on How Hungry Are You?
I don't know.
I wonder.
It would have been great.
Another example, though. These former Raptors.
They love the Toronto market.
It's the content machine. CJ, Serge. There's one more who I'm forgetting off the top of my head. Danny Green. How could I ever forget about Danny Green?
Danny Green.
The OG.
He's still waiting for another ring ceremony.
Still waiting for another ring ceremony. He's still playing this year? He is, right? I don't know where Danny Green's at this year. L.A.? Are we going to see him tomorrow?
I think he plays for the Grizzlies.
We're not going to see him tomorrow.
He's
what a career, though.
Fallen out of conversation.
Championships with multiple teams, successful podcast. Danny Green figured it out. Snakes. Love snakes.
What?
Yeah, he's a big snake guy.
Ew.
Anyway, CJ Miles
not
got the family, got the podcast.
You hear the kids in the background, Daddy.
Got the Raptors experience. Yeah, I think they were saying goodbye. That was nice.
Aw.
Very heartwarming.
They're like, hurry up, make my breakfast sandwich.
What would also warm my heart is another victory with the Wake and Rake. So get your Wake and Rake submissions in. We're doing that, of course, at 8:30. But before that, we got Anthony Stewart to talk a little.
It's been a while.
Brother
since we got
in the
Stewie
NHL.
In here.
Robertson, Stars, Marner, and the Maple Leafs. It's very exciting. We'll do that after the break. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.